This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Two terrific movies from the 1970s have been re-released in two-disc special DVD editions. One is 1975's Dog Day Afternoon, starring Al Pacino as a bank robber. The other is 1976's Network, starring Peter Finch as a sudden and unhinged network news TV celebrity. Both were directed by Sidney Lumet, who provides new commentary on the DVDs. He's also our guest today in an interview from our archives, which Terry Gross recorded in 1989. Sidney Lumet started out as an actor, but shifted early in his career to directing. He was around for the earliest days of live TV in the 1940s and 50s, directing for the Golden Age anthology drama series Studio One, as well as for the historical recreation series You Are There. His first triumph on film was a big-screen adaptation of the TV drama 12 Angry Men in 1957. Since then, his long, impressive string of movie credits includes Long Day's Journey into Night, Failsafe, The Pawnbroker, Serpico, Prince of the City, The Verdict, as well as Network and Dog Day Afternoon, both of which hold up astoundingly well. In Network, former TV writer Paddy Chayefsky was decades ahead of his time. He predicted not only the commercialization of news and the conglomeration of corporate ownership of TV networks, but the whole concept of reality television. And the character of Howard Beale, the angry TV personality who famously screamed, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore," foreshadowed dozens of talk radio and TV opinion shows and stars, with Bill O'Reilly at the top of the pyramid. Let's start with Dog Day Afternoon, about a mess of a bank robbery on a sweltering day in August. Pauline Kael called the film, quote, "one of the best New York movies ever made," unquote. Pacino plays the insecure, manic bank robber Sonny, who nevertheless forges ahead as everything collapses around him. Kael writes, "The most touching element in the film is Sonny's inability to handle all the responsibilities he has assumed. Though he is half crazed by his situation, he is trying to do the right thing by everybody, his wife and children, the suicidal Leon, the hostages in the bank." Here's a scene during the robbery, which is interrupted by a phone call, but not from the police, as Pacino's Sonny expected.
"All right, listen, bastards. You keep away from this bank or we're going to start throwing bodies out the front door one at a time. You got that? Who's this? There was Jenny here. Who's Jenny here?
That's me.
It's a squabble. You got a husband? Yeah, well, he's on the phone. Go ahead.
What could I tell him?
I don't know. Tell him whatever you tell him. Tell him the truth. Oh, what a comedy. WNEW plays all the hits.
Listen, now don't hang up.
First off, is anybody hurt me?
Nobody's hurt.
Well, you keep away from this bank or we're going to start throwing bodies out the front door one at a time. You got that?
Listen, don't do that now. Wait a minute. Let me talk to you for a while, huh? How many people you got in there?
You call me back.
Call me back.
Excuse me. He said he wants to know what time you'll be through.
What? Oh, girly, please.
A scene from the 1975 film Dog Day Afternoon. When Terry spoke with Sidney Lumet in 1989, she asked him about his approach to directing Pacino in that film.
Primarily what he needed was, this is going to sound like an anachronism, and it was, he needed a great sense of freedom and a great sense of restriction. That the creation of the character is really Al's own. He understood something about that man that is irreplaceable, and I don't think a director can ever give. He understood him down to his bone marrow. What he needed was a sense of release, the confidence to know that as extreme as he got in the performance, that it would write, that it went... for example, there's a scene toward the end of the movie where he's talking to his female wife, his real wife, on the telephone, trying to decide what to do. And the scene is extraordinary in the sense that it requires a level of emotion that I've seen very rarely in movies. We did the scene in one take with two cameras, because I didn't want him to have to repeat that emotion over and over again. And when he finished it the first time, it was wonderful. And without waiting an instant, I didn't even cut the cameras. I said, Al, go again. And he looked at me like I was crazy because he was exhausted. He was spent. And I said, right now, action. And what I was driving at was that he had reached such a height at the end of the first take, such an emotional peak. But that's really where I wanted the scene to begin.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the best pieces of movie acting I've ever seen. It was blinding in its intensity, agonizingly painful, and just reached a level of emotion that I don't think I've seen often in movie acting.
Now, you're really known for doing a lot of performances on first and second takes, for not going for a lot of takes. I wonder if you ever run into conflicts where there's one actor in a scene who works really well on that first or second take, and another actor who sees it as their style to go for 15 or 16 takes until they really get it perfect. What do you do if you run into that?
I have run into it, and so far, if there were a piece of wood around the studio, I'd knock on it. But so far, I've been able to convince the 15 or 16 take actor that the other works. The early takes are not imperfect. They are usually the freshest, truest. The repetition I find, and I think for most good actors, the repetitions tend to become mechanical. One doesn't find more truth in it as it goes on. Now, that partially has to do with the way I work because, as you know, or may know, I rehearse very heavily. I rehearse 2 to 3 weeks, depending on the complexity of the characters, before we begin. And those rehearsals are conducted like theater rehearsals in the sense that people learn their lines completely, are working without scripts, they're completely blocked to the degree that we're having run-throughs by the end of it. So it's not as if once we get on camera that this is their first exposure.
Is that uncommon?
Yes, it is. It is. It is not done often. I think mostly those of us who were trained in television do it. I think Arthur Penn does it. I know Arthur Penn does it. John Frankenheimer and so on.
Oh, because you had to do it for the live drama.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And but it turned out for all of us, I think, in movies to have other advantages.
I want to play another short scene from another movie you directed, and this is Network, which came out in 1976. Peter Finch won a posthumous Academy Award for his performance in this. And in this scene, he plays a lunatic, self-styled, messianic broadcaster who is basically preaching his editorial.
I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crying in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, damn it. My life has value. So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
And right after, as he's doing that editorial, people all over Manhattan in high-rise apartment buildings open up their windows, stick their heads out, and start yelling that they're mad as hell and they're not going to take it anymore.
Paddy Chayefsky, he had that unique ability to tap the most fundamental truths in people, in the individual characters, and also in terms of the situation that he was observing. Did you ever see a picture that he wrote called Hospital?
No, I didn't.
Well, it's hilarious as Network is with. Fundamentally, a deeply serious idea behind it, and he did it in that too. I miss him every day.
Network was one of your many movies that was shot in New York locations. Now, I think you were really one of the first directors to actually do location shooting in Manhattan.
Yeah, Kazan first and me right behind him. But at that time, it wasn't fashionable at all. It was very difficult to put together more than one good movie crew because there was that little work going on here.
Why did you want to shoot on location in New York?
Well, once you were shooting in New York, there was almost no choice. We had very limited studio space in those days. So that you had no choice. But also, it coincided clearly with the kind of picture we were doing, which were usually very realistic pictures, pictures that benefited visually from being done on location.
Were there problems when you were one of the pioneers doing that, since crews weren't used to it? The people on the streets weren't used to having movies shot outside their homes or their offices.
Yeah, but they were all good problems. The problems are much more severe now because everybody's so sophisticated. So they not only charge you a hell of a lot more to use their facility, but they're also a little bit more contemptuous and irritated by the inconvenience that shooting makes. In those days, it was glamorous. People were amazed by it, were diverted by it, enchanted by it. So that the problems in those days were actually less severe than the problems now.
Let's talk a little bit about your first film, made in 1957, and this was 12 Angry Men, a courtroom drama. You had before that been directing television, live television dramas. Was this a good transition to make, since it was basically a one-set movie? It's a courtroom drama. It's a jury drama. They're in the deliberation room most of the movie. Was that a good place to start?
It was good, and it was... And it was a great problem, except that I was dumb enough not to know what the problem was. I found out after I had done the movie and people liked it that it was very difficult to shoot a movie in one room. That never occurred to me.
Really?
I had just plunged in with complete ignorance, knowing what I wanted to do with camera, knowing that I could make the camera a good interpretive part of the movie itself, and just blithely went ahead, shot it in 19 days, happy as a lark, and didn't know what the problem was. I may have felt enormously secure at the confinement of it because my background, as you say, had been live television and the theater. So the idea of staging something in one room was something that came very easily to me.
Well, the movie starred Henry Fonda and Lee J. Cobb. Fonda is the only juror initially convinced of the defendant's innocence. Cobb is the last holdout. I want to play a clip from this movie, 12 Angry Men.
Maybe she honestly thought she saw the boy kill his father. I say she only saw a blur.
How do you know what she saw? How does he know all that? How do you know what kind of glasses she wore? Maybe there were sunglasses. Maybe she was farsighted. What do you know about it?
I only know the woman's eyesight is in question now.
She had to be able to identify a person 60 feet away at night without glasses.
You can't send someone off to die on evidence like that.
Oh, don't give me that.
It's a heck of a cast. In addition to Fonda and Lee J. Cobb, you have Jack Warden, Jack Klugman, E.G. Marshall, Ed Begley. You directed them your first time out on film, and you've since directed Paul Newman and younger actors like Al Pacino and Treat Williams. Is there a difference in the acting styles of the actors who you were directing in the 50s and the actors who came of age in, say, the 70s?
Not really, Terry. The basic craft of acting is, in the United States, has been set for some years, really, even before the method came in. Basically, people like Fonda worked out of a profound sense of truth. In fact, a man like Fonda didn't know how to do anything falsely and used himself brilliantly. Both of those elements are foundations of the method, and even though he wasn't called a method actor in the sense of having studied the method, he basically worked out of that, as most good actors did.
Do you think of yourself as a method director?
No, I become the kind of director that becomes whatever his actors need. When I did Murder on the Orient Express, I could work the way the English actors work. When we did Long Day's Journey into Night, there was a perfect example. Kate Hepburn has a very specific way of working, her own technique. Ralph Richardson is a prime example of British technique, which is primarily from what we call the outside in. Dean Stockwell works completely method from the inside out, and Jason has his own glorious world of creating something from inside himself, and heaven knows where it comes from. But I think part of the job of directing is to not make the actors work your way, but for you to work as a director any way that makes them comfortable.
Now, you really came from a theater family. Your father acted in the Yiddish theater. you acted when you were very young. I think you either performed in or a standby in the Dead End Kids on Broadway?
I wasn't one of the Dead End Kids. I was in the play. There were other children's parts.
It was a play called Dead End on Broadway. Okay.
Right.
Now, did this experience with the Yiddish theater via your father and your own performances help you understand actors as a director?
I think so, Terry. The biggest thing about actors is that they really are the infantry. They are the most exposed. And most good work, not just acting, but really any creative work, is a matter of use of self, self-exposure. And, as I say, actors are the infantry in that. It's their emotions, their physiognomy that's being examined, rejected, accepted at the actual moment that they're doing it. They're right up there.
Why did you give up acting for directing?
I found that process very invading. When I got out of the Army, I'd been acting since I was 5 years old, and I got out of the Army in 25, and at 25, and went on with it for about another 3 years, and I was primarily a theater actor. I knew that good acting, as I say, is self-exposure to a large degree, and I got sort of embarrassed about revealing those parts of myself to 1,500 strangers a night, if you were in a hit, that is. Otherwise, it was to 50 strangers a night. But there was something about acting that no longer worked for me, and I just slowly drifted into directing.
Did having a father in the Yiddish theater help you love performance?
Absolutely,
drama?
Absolutely. The peculiar thing is there's a sort of strange post-World War II American problem. Children of actors and writers and directors tend to be nervous and upset. And more than nervous, they're terrified of going into their parents' work. And yet the history of the world is going into your parents' work. I mean, in England, in the Redgrave family, Natasha now is the fourth generation of that family that's become an actor. And fortunately, it's beginning to make some sense in America. Two years ago, I did a movie with Jane Fonda and Jeff Bridges, and I had worked with both of their fathers. I'd worked with Henry and I'd worked with Lloyd.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that very moving. I was thrilled at working with the two of them because that sense of continuity is lovely. It's the way it should be. And I'm quite sure that my father, being the actor he was and bringing me into the theater at a very early age, was an enormously beneficial and happy-making thing to happen to one.
You obviously love film directing. When you're doing a movie, what's the part that you most look forward to and the part that you know you have to do but you really don't enjoy at all?
There's only one part that I have to do. All of it is a thrilling process to me. Pre-production, shooting, post-production, editing, music. The only part that's a bit of a drag is what we call the mix, which is when we come in and do the final soundtrack and put every chair squeak in and every door slam in. It requires enormous concentration because it's largely a mechanical process rather than a creative one, although some directors use it very creatively. The soundtrack that I keep remembering particularly is the soundtrack of Apocalypse Now, which was a brilliant piece of work and a totally creative piece of work. However, you do have to do it. I feel I have to do it myself because if the mix is a bad mix, if the wrong thing is emphasized, it can seriously affect the movie and be very destructive to a movie. So I have to do it, but it's the only non-joyful part of movie making to me.
Sidney Lumet speaking with Terry Gross in 1988. Two of his most famous films from the 1970s, Network and Dog Day Afternoon, are out now in special two-disc DVD editions. Lumet himself provides audio commentary on the discs. Let's close with a seminal scene from Dog Day Afternoon, in which Al Pacino, as Sonny, takes a hostage outside the bank to negotiate with a New York cop played by Charles Durning. Some of the other cops surrounding the building get too close, getting Sonny all excited. And that gets the rowdy New York crowd of onlookers excited, too. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air.